Hello, beautiful people. This is the Michael Slate Show, and I am your guest host, Sansara Taylor. On today's show, we'll be sharing segments from the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show, which airs on YouTube. Let's begin.
Welcome to the RNL, the Revolution Nothing Less show. My name is Sansara Taylor, and I'm joined by Annie Day.
Very glad to be here, and welcome to everyone tuning in. This show is about an actual revolution to overthrow this whole system of capitalism imperialism, a system which has now put a fascist regime into power. We base ourselves on the new communism that's been developed by the revolutionary leader Bob Avakian, and you're going to be hearing later in today's episode from Bob Avakian about what capitalism really is.
This past Thursday was May 1st, May Day. It's a revolutionary holiday, an internationalist holiday all over the world, people standing up against exploitation, against capitalism, against injustice. And here in this country, there were protests in big cities, small towns, all over the place against the attacks on immigrants, against Trump's assault on the rule of law, and against a lot of the other crimes of this Trump fascist regime. So we were out in the streets, standing up, joining with people, raising the demand the fascist Trump regime must go now. And we were interviewing people, and we're going to be bringing you some of their voices as a big part of today's show.
So we want to start with the immediate juncture we face, fascism rapidly advancing in this country. On May 15th, the U.S. Supreme Court is set for a hearing on Trump's fascist executive order overturning birthright citizenship. This is a big deal. Birthright citizenship is basically became the law of the land after the Civil War in the U.S., where anyone born on U.S. soil was a citizen, in contrast to before, where many were born slaves. And this was passed not as a policy, but as an amendment, meaning it was part of the U.S. Constitution. And on his first day into office, one of Trump's many fascist executive orders was aimed at overturning birthright citizenship, which he cannot do through executive order in any kind of constitutional way. So the hearing on May 15th at the Supreme Court is basically is related to this battle, this case, which is working its way through the courts right now. And if the Supreme Court rules in Trump's favor, then birthright citizenship will no longer be the law of the land in most of the U.S. In terms of the stakes of this, the revolutionary leader Bob Avakian talked about this in his most recent social media message, Revolution Number 115.
If Trump wanted to legally and constitutionally change this, which itself would be a very bad reactionary move, he could try to do so by following the procedures for amending the Constitution that are set forth in the Constitution itself. But that is just the point. Trump does not recognize any limits to his fascist dictatorship, not the Constitution, and not the laws or the rule of law and due process of law.
So this is an extremely dangerous situation, as Bob Avakian just noted. Trump could have done this through constitutional means, but the whole point is he's violently assaulting and shredding the rule of law, any protections people are supposed to have in the courts, due process, any of this. And it's coming in the wake of Trump sending immigrants, including Kilmar Abrego Garcia, who he admitted was a mistake, down to the torture prison in El Salvador with no due process. It's in the wake of Trump promising and pledging that he wants to do this to U.S. citizens, quote unquote, homegrowns. And if this assault on the rule of law and due process is not checked, there is no constraint for Trump and his MAGA minions going after all those they deem enemies, they deem unhuman, women, uppity women, LGBT people, black people, immigrants, anybody he wants to seek retribution against, with no pretense of rights and protections of the people. And this is a very dangerous situation.
Yeah, I mean, just even this last week, Trump has deported three U.S. citizens' children, a two-year-old, a four-year-old, and a seven-year-old. Despite the fact that they're in both two different cases, both of their fathers were actual citizens, and they were deported, including the four-year-old who was in the middle of cancer treatment. And they were all sent back to Honduras with no due process, no ability to contest what was happening.
In Wisconsin, federal officials arrested a federal judge for because she didn't participate in helping ICE round somebody up. This is an unprecedented assault on the judiciary.
And that's not all. Just in this last week, Trump has fired over 400 scientists and experts working on the next climate assessment. He's threatened to defund NPR and PBS. He's continuing to threaten Harvard's tax status for not bowing down and capitulating to every one of his fascist demands to basically overtake the university. And then, I've been so upset about this, RFK Jr., spreading lies and lunacy is basically threatening to change the entire procedure through which vaccines get vetted and approved in such a way that is basically going to, or potentially and very likely, could change at the ability for the COVID booster to be available next fall. And meanwhile, just spreading lies and lunacies against autistic people, threatening to create a registry, which just calls to mind what the Nazis did during Nazi Germany, where they created registries of people with disabilities as part of a eugenicist program, basically killing people that were deemed less than worthy, less than fully human. It's fascist lunacy galloping quickly.
So all this is on one side, and it's accelerating, and we could spend more time going through more of the crimes of this regime. They are mounting. But at the same time, on the other side, there is a rising that has continued to happen. There are tens of millions of people. There's a decent country. Half the country, or a little less than half the country, is with this fascist program. But there's a decent country, too, and tens of millions of people who hate what's happening, who hate what Trump concentrates, what he's doing. And they've been out in the streets. We're going to show many of them. We're going to show some of them in a few minutes, the interviews that we did. But there is a race, a really pitched battle that's on as to whether or not these decent people, this decent country, is going to come out with enough strength, enough breadth, enough determination, enough sustained resistance, and enough clarity on the fact that there is no compromise with this regime. There's no beating it back and holding it in check. It has to be removed from power. It has to be driven from power through the mass struggle of the masses of people rising up, yes, nonviolently, but with ferocity and willingness to sacrifice and put it on the line and spread throughout the institutions. There's a fight to bring this force forward, which we see in potential. We see it in the streets. We see it in the institutions. Mm-hmm. We even see it reaching up into high up into the different ruling structures of society, people who are not with this fascism. But there needs to be a impetus from below in a way that is not yet forged. We see the potential, but it's not there yet.
I think this point on the need for the understanding and the clarity of what we're facing and what it means to act commensurate is exactly right. And last weekend, refusefascism.org held national assemblies where I think over 150 people gathered in three cities. And we want to play a clip from Andy Z, who's a regular co-host of this show, a spokesperson for Revolution Books in New York, and a co-initiator with you, Sansara, of Refuse Fascism. So let's watch that.
Here I want to talk about and open up the shortest of our messages. The Trump fascist regime must go now. And on signs and on banners and a chance, we can just even get simpler. Trump must go now. That says an awful lot. But why does it say must go? That's going to be the first question we're going to talk about. We're going to divide both slogans into two parts, and then we're going to talk about the relationship between them. Why does it say must go? Why does he just, if he just stops doing some of the things that we don't like, well, why wouldn't that be enough? This is the first question we're going to get into. And then why now? Why not in 2026 take the Congress from him? 2028 take the presidency from him? Why does it have to be now? Why do we say that it can become too late to stop fascism? So the first thing is, let's look into that slogan. It says a lot and it does a lot of work for us. Must go, must go. Anything short of that is not going to actually accomplish what needs to happen in this time period. It won't be equivalent. It won't meet the challenge of what we face in a fascist regime. So we need to get into why. I also want to talk about the second slogan, in the name of humanity. Okay? In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. Why do we say in the name of humanity? Why don't we say in the name of just the immigrants? We're here in a center that I'm sure it would be besieged under this Trump regime, LGBTQ center. Why don't we say just in the name of trans people? Why don't we say just in the name of immigrants? Why don't we say just in the name of the Palestinians? Why don't we say just in the name of black people? Why don't we say in the name of humanity? Why don't we say in the interests of American democracy? Why do we say in the name of humanity? What is that telling us about the breadth of the movement that we need, that's required? And what does it say about the morality of this movement? Of who are we for? What are we for? Now, ultimately, what we're for, but probably as many people are here, or there's probably several views of what should come, what the future we would dream of should be, and some of us are working for. As I said, I'm a revolutionary. I'm working for a whole different society, a whole different economic and political system.
Oh, yeah.
Others are working for to return to some sense of what came before. And so we'll have a chance to talk about it, to discuss that over the coming weeks and months. None of what any of us dream of and want to see happen happens as long as the fascist regime is in power. So anyway, just to return to this, why do we say in the name of humanity? The second part of that is we refuse to accept a fascist America, very carefully worded. Okay, it doesn't say we refuse to accept America. Some of us might agree with that. A lot of people around the world might agree with that. But it says, why do we refuse to accept a fascist America? How does that draw a line that millions and millions of people can unite around and that is consistent with the aspirations and desires of people who see some of the problems that we face rooted in the history of this country and others who see in that history the prospects of a better future? But it draws a very sharp line. So these are the two questions we're getting, the two sides of both of those slogans that we want to get into. Because what we all understand together means that when you're out there in Sullivan County, or you're out there in Orange County, or you're out there in Southern California, or Arizona, or Texas, and then somebody shoves a microphone in your face, assuming it's not a fascist, but even tell them what the truth is, you can just break it down. And around this country, it resonates from many different perspectives. The dividing line here is this regime must go, and it must go now. And we're doing this not just for ourselves, but for the future of humanity. And we are saying we cannot accept it. We refuse to cooperate, conciliate, collaborate with a fascist regime. That's what has to be inspiring and infusing millions of people. And it's on all of you to expand our ranks by 10 and 100 fold. To be able to bring that to people.
So in that, Andy is walking through the very important slogans, the demands that refusefascism.org is united around. The Trump fascist regime must go now. And in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. And he's posing really important questions that millions need to come to understand, and that these regional conferences that Refuse Fascism held last weekend grappled with and deepened our collective understanding of and our determination to go out and fight for. And we're going to show a clip of Coco Das, actually more than a clip, doing exactly that at the May Day rally down in Houston in just a moment. But I do want to invite you to comment on the questions that Andy posed. Share your thinking about these slogans, about these demands in relation to how he just asked us to think about and wrangle with them. Leave a comment below. Let us know what you're thinking. Let us know your ideas on this and be part of this wrangling together.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what you saw on the streets on May 1st, what you saw on the streets on April 19th, what you see in different ways throughout society, and the lawyers that are speaking out, and the professors that are calling on their universities not to capitulate, you see the power and the upset and the depth of outrage and agony that's going on across the country, but that needs to be deepened with the understanding of what we're really facing and needs to be sharpened with that single unifying mission. And it's why it was so important on May 1st that the slogan, "The Trump fascist regime must go now," was on signs and banners in some of the cities across the country. So now we want to go to the speech from Coco Dask on May 1st, speaking from Houston, Texas.
Y'all look beautiful and you sound beautiful. If you feel this, repeat after me. Trump must go now.
Trump must go now.
In the name of humanity.
In the name of humanity.
We refuse to accept a fascist America. That's right. What we are facing is fascism. And I don't care if Donald Trump was elected, Hitler was elected, he came into power through the normal channels. Fascism is never legitimate. And it is our responsibility. It is our responsibility. And actually, there is a force in this country that has the power to stop this regime before it consolidates its rule. Do you know what that force is? That's right. It is us, the millions of people in this country who do not want to live in a fascist America, who do not want to see our immigrant brothers and sisters and siblings being rounded up and sent to torture prisons in El Salvador, who do not want to relegate women to becoming incubators, who do not want to force LGBTQ people back into the closet for them and for all of humanity.
Right.
When we must rise up and act to stop the consolidation of Trump MAGA fascism. Fascism is a different form of rule in this country with devastating consequences for people here and around the world. It is radically oppressive and repressive, and fascism has direction and momentum. You see what they've done in the next 100 days. Imagine what they can do in the next 100 if we do not get into the streets, stay in the streets, call everyone you know who cannot stand, who's waking up in agony over what's happening, call them back into the streets and tell them that if we demand that the Trump fascist regime must go now, we actually have the power to stop this.
Amen. Yeah.
Do not accept their future. There can be no conciliation or collaboration between the world we want and the country they want. We have no common cause with MAGA fascism.
No.
And look, waiting for the next elections will be too late. We have the power now. We need to come back into the streets now. Millions of people from different perspectives in nonviolent, sustained protest, just like they did in South Korea.
Yeah!
Not backing down, not relenting, until this regime is gone from power. I'm going to read from A Call to Conscience, A Call to Act from RefuseFascism.org. I'm on the national board of RefuseFascism.org, and if you want to get involved, you should come talk to me. But all of you, from your different organizations, from your different perspectives, we all have a role to play in projecting this demand from coast to coast, all over Texas, and all over the U.S. and all over the world. We must organize and struggle as we have never before. We must not allow ourselves to be divided and conquered. We must unite all who can be united from many different viewpoints and perspectives to foster and draw on a collective spirit of courage and righteous fury and willingness to make the necessary sacrifices for the greater good of defeating this fascism. We, in our millions, are a force powerful enough to defeat Trump MAGA fascism. Let the world see our determination and courage and hear our righteous demand. This is a call to conscience, call to act, that you should go to refusefascism.org and sign. And right now, I want you to take a pledge with me. If you put your fist up in the air, and say no.
No!
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 In the name of humanity. We refuse to accept.
We refuse to accept.
A fascist America.
A fascist America.
Trump must go now.
Trump must go now.
We need a situation where across the country, thousands and thousands of people are coming together to do that pledge that Coco just led from Houston, Texas. And Sansara, maybe you can talk some about kind of what came together through these assemblies and kind of what are some of the key things that our audience needs to understand.
Well, one of the big things that was grappled with at these Refuse Fascism regional assemblies, these conferences last weekend, was really to take stock, both in the juggernaut of fascism and all of what we heard from Andy, what we just heard from Coco about, we cannot wait. This has to be done now. 2026, 2028 is way too late. But also the basis that exists in the tens of millions, as you were describing, people who are outraged, people who do not want to accept this, people who are finding ways to give expression to that right now. And what is needed to mobilize them in a way that could unseat this regime? And I think a big point that was grappled with in all the assemblies was that we refuse fascism. We, the millions who don't want to accept this fascist America, don't need to organize millions. Trump is going to jolt the millions into political life. And you see that happening. He's shocking and offending people and driving them to look for answers and find ways to act. What we need to do, what the broader we of Refuse Fascism needs to do, is project the demand, the Trump fascist regime must go now, as a major poll in society, get it seen by millions, get it taken up by millions, and organize growing numbers of people, enough people and growing numbers that they can lead those millions to carry forward that mission. And you heard Coco speak about the call to conscience, the call to act from Refuse Fascism. And this is a document at its website that there's a long version and a short version that breaks down the strategy, that breaks down what we're facing and breaks down the strategy to unite all who can be united from very different perspectives to stand up and carry out this mission. So you need the demand projected before millions, and you need thousands who are organized around this mission, signing this call to conscience, call to act, and taking it up to be able to interact with and lead those millions as Trump is jolting them and shocking them and waking them up.
Yeah, and I just want to add one more thing on the importance and the basis of this very, very, very broad unity. You know, the neoconservative David Brooks, who's a regular writer, op-ed writer in the New York Times, called for a national civic uprising right now. J.B. Pritzker, the governor of Illinois, is calling for protests. And he says, I never thought I'd be calling for protests. And he's calling for disruption.
Never before in my life have I called for mass protests, for mobilization, for disruption. But I am now.
Robert Reich, the former labor secretary for Bill Clinton, is calling for a general strike. These are the kinds of ideas. And Bob Avakian, in his most recent social media message, references some of these things. But these are the things people need to be putting their heads together right now on how to accomplish. How do we actually meet this demand that Trump must go now? So you were out there then yesterday interviewing people as part of this May 1st protest. And why don't you talk some about what we're going to see?
Okay, so we went out yesterday to two different gatherings, and the first one was kind of unprecedented. It was, I never knew this actually. Apparently, May 1st was years ago declared Law Day, and it's a day to celebrate the rule of law. But this year, lawyers and judges and people involved in the justice system decided to mark it with public protests in defense of the rule of law, in defense of the judges who have had death threats put on them because Trump has threatened the judiciary and undermined it and demonized judges, and they're coming under fire. And you know, like I said, unprecedented. You had lawyers and judges out being rowdy in the streets. So we went out to one of these protests here in LA, and I did some interviews with people speaking about what they saw as the threat posed by the Trump regime. And then there's also been immigrant outpourings for years around May 1st, immigrant rights outpourings. And so we went and spoke to people who were organized in part of a protest here in Los Angeles around immigrant rights, but people also brought in a lot of other issues. So you'll hear that as well.
So let's watch.
All right. So tell me what we're doing here today. What is today and who's gathered here?
Well, this is really a rally in support of, you know, the legal system, the courts, the judges, the lawyers.
I am a lawyer, officer of the court for 20 years.
I've been a lawyer for about 5 years.
I'm Jeff. I'm an immigration lawyer.
My name is Maria, and I'm a solo practitioner.
And I think the point we're trying to make is that the judiciary is an equal branch of government that needs to stand up for the rights of everyone.
We're absolutely terrified for our clients and even for ourselves. I mean, they're talking about deporting U.S. citizens. So, yeah, I mean, this has to stop.
We're here to celebrate our legal backgrounds, and we're here to say that we are the line of defense for what's happening in the community, and we just kind of renewed our vows and our oaths to uphold the Constitution, the United States Constitution, the California Constitution.
My position is I don't know exactly what to do about it, but I would like to figure out what everyone else in my field are saying what to do about it, and that's why I appeared today.
Have you ever seen this level of assault on due process, the constitutional protections of people to due process, anything like this?
This is really unlike anything, right? I mean, Marco Rubio recently said that they're looking for other countries to send people to, and they're doing this so that to get them away from the protections that the U.S. Constitution is supposed to offer. They want to just lock people up with no due process. They don't even want to give people 24 hours. They want to lock them in gulags, and I've never seen anything like it.
I never thought due process would be such a, you know, in the news so much, but wow, when you don't have it, it can be really devastating.
What's the example of due process under assault, and what's the significance of it to everybody?
Yeah, well, interestingly, I think even attorneys don't think about it very much until now, until it's under attack. And all due process means is notice of what you're accused of, and an opportunity to be heard and tell your side of the story before you're deprived of either your liberty, you know, you're put in prison or jail, or your property, like money, or your life. So that's why it's so important, because otherwise, you know, and we are also a country of where you're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. So you're not supposed to be able to have tyrants and powerful people, whether they're bazillionaires or if they're president, they're not supposed to have the power to just come and take people who have not been tried by a court, who have not been tried by a jury of their peers, all of those elements that are so, you know, we kind of have been taking for granted.
Obviously, there are people in our country currently not getting due process, and they are legally entitled to due process, and the Constitution requires that everyone gets due process. So it's very concerning to me.
And what is the most alarming violation of due process that you've seen recently?
Well, there's so many, but I'll just give one that was stunning, and I think it woke up a lot of people, was seeing the tweet of a judge being walked out of the court by FBI officers in handcuffs. And that was because the judge was in charge of her courtroom and directed somebody out another door because these officers were causing disruption in her courtroom, directed them to a public walkway, not some kind of underground corridor, another public walkway out the hallway. And then they claimed that was obstruction of justice. And then for them to act like this is a head on a platter, that they're showing what they're going to do and try to intimidate and threaten judges, lawyers from just giving people their basic rights, like that was stunning. And I hope that is the wake up call to everyone to just say, no, this is too much.
What difference does it make when a president discards due process overall?
I mean, imagine you're just walking down the street and someone accuses you of being in a violent terrorist gang, and then they throw you in a van and put you in a prison, and you're just, you have kids or you don't have kids, and you have a job and you have a family and everything, and all of a sudden now you're locked up for absolutely no reason. That's what we're looking at. I mean Kilmara Abrego Garcia had a legal right to be in the United States, and he was disappeared, you know, and now they're photoshopping MS-13 onto his hand to make it seem like he actually was in the gang, and there's no evidence. They've never provided any substantial evidence that he was in a gang. So, but and yes, he was not a U.S. citizen, but they're talking about deporting U.S. citizens to El Salvador and putting them in gulags. So what's to stop the Trump administration from doing that to any of us?
And Trump said he's sitting next to the president of El Salvador, Bukele, about a week and a half ago and said, well, we're not going to bring Kilmara Abrego back. And soon you're going to have to open 5 more prisons down there. We're going to start sending homegrown U.S. citizens to El Salvador.
It is horrifying to witness that, horrifying to hear about. And it is a yet another danger to basically all of our rights as citizens. I think that this is extremely important to pay attention to and to be aware of. And if possible, to raise our voices in whatever little way we can.
We definitely have to raise our voices against his rhetoric. It's very dangerous rhetoric, and we cannot sit still and say, oh, he's just playing, or he doesn't mean that. We definitely, he means everything that he's saying, and we need to pay attention to it. Absolutely.
And as far as you know, if Trump ignored a direct order from the Supreme Court, what recourse does the court have?
There really isn't one necessarily. I mean, the foundation of the United States was norms, and the norm that was established was that the other branches are supposed to respect the orders that the Supreme Court issues. And when you have a president who doesn't respect norms, that's a really scary thing.
Have you ever seen so many lawyers, clerks, judges, and others in the legal profession out in the streets?
I haven't seen anything like this. You know, I've seen some things, but nothing like this. And this is really incredible. It's great to see the energy. This is what it's going to take. You know, civil disobedience, I think, is going to be important.
We're the last line of defense as well. And if we don't stand up, I don't know where we're going to be. I mean, it's like, God help us. You know, if we don't stand up, this is really serious. We're in some serious times I've never seen before, and I'm glad that I do have a legal background and a degree so I can stand up and be a voice for those who are voiceless and fight the people that have power.
I haven't been to a protest before. I'll show you the sign. So as long as we're all operating under the Constitution, then there should not be a problem, right? But it doesn't feel like that is happening at the moment.
I will have to say no. I haven't been to a protest before, so my answer would have to be no.
I am a huge fan of marches and protests, because when you see thousands and thousands of people coming out of their, you know, coming out of wherever their comfort zone, you know, to demand change and to say we're not going to tolerate it, you know, I think that local officials and national officials, federal officials, they all have to take notice of that. Because otherwise, people stay home, and it's really easy just to kind of shut your eyes and hide under the covers. And when that happens, that's when you're most in danger.
We need all boots on the ground, all hands on deck. I know life is lifing, like they say now, but that's happening for all of us. We have to sacrifice and get out there and just let our voices be heard. You know, and there's power in unity, there's power in numbers. So we need to come out of our day-to-day. I know it's rough because we're all trying to make a living and keep a roof over our heads and food on the table, but this is important. If we don't rise up, you know, like I said before, God help us.
And would you mind reading your sign?
Yeah, you want to read it?
Yeah, you read the sign.
Yeah, she made it.
Knowledge is power. Ignorance is the only way they win. Stop the coup.
And why do you call it a coup?
Because they're trying to take over in inappropriate and illegal ways, and they just need to be stopped.
I like the sign because it said the system is this whole system is rotten and illegal illegitimate. We need and we demand a whole new way to live in a fundamentally different system. So we want a different kind of politic, not a racism, not a people who want to, you know, take the immigrants to take the our this country because we are the workers.
The Trump fascist regime must go now. What it means to me is that this, you know, democracy, whatever that really means for us, which I think is, you know, that can be debated, whether we have a democracy or not anymore. But, you know, just how, like, heading into a complete dictatorship with no, you know, the oppression of the press, the oppression of workers, the oppression of women, the oppression of trans, the oppression, like, it sort of goes on and on and on and on. So, you know, this type of political movement shouldn't work here. Unfortunately, it is, and it seems to be going in a direction that, like, we shouldn't be letting it go in, and more people need to be out here in the middle of the day and fighting. So that's why I'm here.
So, Oscar, you were one of the MCs here at this May Day rally today. Tell us what it was about and why you came out, why others came out today.
Yeah, I mean, we're facing unprecedented times of rising fascism, forces that are trying to divide the community, and we need to meet the moment with solidarity, unity, and collective power. And I think that was the purpose of today's march. Obviously, May Day is a historical international holiday for the worker, and Chirla has been, since the beginning, one of the main organizers of the May Day march here in Los Angeles, and we want to continue that history, but also, again, have a space for people to come together and really build the solidarity that's going to be needed to push back the fascism, the totalitarianism, the draconian immigration reform that we're seeing today.
We're here to protest Trump, and I know that one of the things that he's trying to go after is, you know, people's knowledge. He wants people to be complicit, and in doing so, he needs people that are ignorant. The dumber he keeps people, the easier it is to control them. So that's why he's going after the universities. He's going after people's rights. You know, there was a point when they were recruiting braceros, where they would line up literally hundreds of braceros in a big farm, and the owners would walk by them, and the owners would pick the workers that were looking down or submissive. And that's exactly what they want now. They want people to be submissive so they could exploit them.
Tell who the braceros were.
The braceros were primarily workers from Mexico, central Mexico, that were recruited here to help the U.S. during the 60s. And there were over about 5 million that eventually came and worked, you know. But, you know, they recruited workers to help who? The U.S. Just the way they love to attack the immigrants, and yet they don't want to fix the immigration system. They want it that way. You know, just imagine if they had a fixed immigration system where you pay workers what they deserve, you give them health care. They don't want that. And it's easier to exploit workers who don't have those rights. That's it.
You used an extremely important word, that word fascism. Say why you're referring to the Trump regime as a fascist regime.
I think because it's consolidating power under the executive, you know. It's not respecting the checks and balances of our government, and I think that's a telltale sign of a fascist regime.
What history are you referencing that you don't want to see again?
Genocide, concentration camps, oppression, and just like hurting our people, you know? Yeah.
And do you feel that with Trump in office, those things are real threats today?
Yes, because there's all these news saying that it doesn't matter if you were born here or not, that they can just say that they can just deport you now. And so before, we were here to support the people that couldn't come represent themselves, but now it's a danger to speak up for anything.
What's your message to people who are afraid right now?
Yeah, I mean, that's not anything new, right? Like, I think back in the early 2000s, there was a narrative about like hiding in the shadows, right? Making yourself, and I think it makes sense. Sometimes you feel like you need to make yourself small to feel to be protected, right? But You know, as we can see now, their plan is to deport everybody. They're coming after everyone, undocumented immigrants, but also people who are, you know, born here, right? You are birthright citizenship. So I think, this, like I said in the beginning, this isn't the time to hide. This is the time to fight back and to be loud and to be out here to show that, you know, they're not going to scare us into the shadows again. That's never going to happen.
Anything else you want to say on May Day to the world?
Well, so people, so don't be scared. So we have power. We have to fight against the politics, and we're the power. Yeah.
Spread love. They want to separate us. They want us to be against each other. And so if we can look at it from the bigger picture, if we all unite, we can make a difference.
I'm going to keep coming out here and protesting every chance I get until we get rid of this fascist regime.
Once again, let me remind you that you are listening to The Michael Slate Show.
Well, I'm really glad that we postponed the show by 2 days to be able to be out in the streets, to be learning from people in the streets. And I'll say, you know, in addition to the depth of what came through in these interviews, being out there, we also mass distributed these pamphlets that we talked about last week from Bob Avakian, Trump MAGA Fascism, what we're really facing, why, and what must be done to defeat it before it's too late. And as we said last week on the show, we want to get these out in the many, many, many thousands. And last weekend, we distributed over 5,000 copies at the LA Book Festival. And on May 1st, we got out some thousands. We're still waiting to hear the numbers. But really, in terms of connecting people up with the understanding of what the title says, what we're really facing, why and what must be done. You know, when we would pass these out to people, the title itself would make people want to go, yes, I want to know that. I want to hear the answers to that. So everything really matters to, you know, if you don't have stacks of copies, please write to the Bob Avakian Institute, who is raising funds to get these out in huge numbers. We'll send you a stack. We'll send you 20. We'll send you 2,000. We want to print more and more to really, you know, to help people understand what we're really facing, to be able to act commensurate with this situation. And I also want to add, you know, we saw some of the lawyers that were out in the streets yesterday. And one of the things that some of us did in LA is, as part of distributing this pamphlet, we stuffed it with this really important piece that's also printed on the Bob Avakian Institute's website. And it's called Bob Avakian on the Law, Justice, and Ending Exploitation and Oppression. And, you know, I'll say, if you're watching this for the first time, if you've never read this piece, if you read it some time ago, go to the Bob Avakian Institute's website, download this, read it. It's a revelatory understanding of the nature of the rule of law under this system and what kind of rule of law is necessary and possible in a radically different system. Go to our website, read it. As I said, I'm the director of the Bob Avakian Institute. Contact us if you want to talk about this, if you want to invite us to speak to your group, to your, you know, family, to your community group. These are the kinds of discussions we need to be getting into in this situation.
Well, there is a tremendous hunger for understanding. I mean, what people thought was solid in this country, what people thought was just the way things are and never thought to question, is being shattered and violated every day by Trump and this fascist regime. And it's raising really profound questions. And there's, I mean, there's really nothing like this. There's nothing like what Bob Avakian has done. We want to go to something that takes you deeper into the nature of this system. From Bob Avakian. It's from the interviews that I did with him earlier this year. I asked him about capitalism and the growing anti-capitalist sentiment and how people understand that and what's a scientific understanding. And this is important anytime, but it's especially relevant right now in the wake of May Day, when people were talking about the billionaires and the working class and capitalism and its problems. And there's a very positive side of that, but it's also important that this get deepened with a scientific understanding. And nobody breaks this down the way that Bob Avakian does. So we want to share that with you now.
There has been really a growing phenomenon of people, especially young people, identifying as anti-capitalist and seeing capitalism as a problem. And I wondered if you could speak to both what accounts you think for this rise in anti-capitalist sentiment, but also how popular understandings of capitalism differ from a scientific understanding of what capitalism actually is and how it actually functions and why this distinction matters.
The problem is when people think that they're opposed to capitalism, or when they talk about capitalism, they just think of it as greed, or just, you know, the wrong distribution of the very lopsided distribution of wealth, where like the billionaire class, has too much wealth, and there's too many people going without, which is true again, but that's just once again an outward expression of the deeper reality of how this system actually functions. And capitalism is a system based on exploitation. It's based upon a small number of people accumulating wealth from the labor of other people. That's the essence of capitalism. It's also the essence of every system of exploitation. If you think about it, you know, if you go back to slavery, well, it's obvious that people are accumulating wealth from the labor of others. Or, you know, even the feudal system where you had serfs and big landowners exploiting the serfs, they were getting wealthy from the exploitation of the serfs. Under capitalism, it's more disguised, because the outward appearance is, well, you go get a job and they pay you a wage, and it's an equal exchange. They pay you a wage and then you work for them, and then they make money off of that, but you're getting a wage in return. So it seems like it's some kind of equal exchange. But really, through the process of capitalist exploitation, people, and not just in this country again, but all over the world, including these children in Africa and elsewhere, you know, are creating a lot more wealth in the time that they're being forced to work for these capitalists than is equal to what they get paid. So the rest of that wealth is accumulated by the capitalists. And a very important point along with this is that it's not just one group of capitalists all sharing the wealth collectively or cooperatively. That's not the way capitalism works. Capitalism is a system of separate ownership of, you know, the means of production, the factories, the land, the raw materials, you know, the machinery, the technology. These big capitalist corporations, you know, accumulate billions of dollars through ownership of these means of production, the means of producing wealth by exploiting people using those means of production. But they're all in competition with each other, because each of them is accumulating privately. So, you know, you see it constantly. Even the gigantic corporations and other forms of capitalist wealth get driven under through the competition. And so, you know, with other capitalists. And this is, again, is a worldwide phenomenon at this stage in the development of capitalism, in this stage of human history. And so, you know, this leads to like a lot of anarchy under the capitalist system. And that's why, you know, things don't get produced that people need, but are not profitable to capitalists, or not profitable enough in terms of their competition with other capitalists that are either in the same field of exploitation or somewhere else, but ready to pounce on them and take over from them if they don't keep up in the ruthless competition. This is what capitalism is. It's a system that's driven by this exploitation and by this anarchic competition among capitalists, which then gets expressed even on the level of countries, where capitalist states are in conflict with each other over the, you know, areas where they can exploit people more profitably, over key sources of raw materials that they need to accumulate, you know, more cheaply, over strategic parts of the world and trade routes. And that's why you have all these wars and conflicts and everything else. This is what capitalism is. And as I've been referring to, we are now at the stage where it's capitalism imperialism, which means it's a worldwide system of exploitation, not just exploitation within a particular country by the capitalists within that country. They're all competing, especially the big ones, on an international scale. And this leads to all the chaos and madness and, yes, war on a huge scale repeatedly because of this basic anarchic drive to outcompete each other by, you know, more intensely exploiting people and by introducing new technology that enables them to more effectively accumulate capital. That's the capitalist system. And it leads to the fact, you know, this is something that, you know, it's actually, you know, it's almost unbelievable, but it's true. Something I pointed out before, you know, think about World War II, which developed out of this conflict among these capitalist imperialist powers and then involved, you know, revolutionary forces and what was at that time a socialist state, the Soviet Union. But it arose out of this conflict among different capitalist imperialist countries. And think about, you know, tens of millions of people died in that war, and there was tremendous destruction. You know, not in the U.S. because the U.S. itself, although there were hundreds of thousands of U.S. soldiers that died, but the U.S. was basically spared the destruction that many other parts of the world suffered as a result of that war because it was isolated from the main theaters of that war. But still, tens of millions of people died. In the Soviet Union, somewhere between around 25 million people died in that war. And that was, in fact, the major... That, you know, that war that was waged by the Soviet Union was the main way in which Nazi Germany was defeated. Not by FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and the U.S. You know, Army, although it played a secondary role. So there's World War II. But think about this. After World War II, with the U.S. emerging as the most powerful imperialist country in the world, replacing the British Empire as the most powerful imperialist. Since World War II, in that situation with the U.S., the most powerful imperialist predator in the world, and I use that word deliberately because it describes what they actually do around the world. Think about this. More than 500 million children, particularly in what's called a third world, or the south of the world, you know, in Latin America, Africa, the Middle East, and Asia, more than 500 million children have died since World War II as a result of malnutrition and starvation and preventable disease because of the way the world is dominated by the capitalist imperialist system with the U.S. sitting atop it all as the major predator. Just think why, how could anyone... You know, be, you know, not just be totally, you know, driven to want to bring about a major, you know, fundamental change, knowing something like that, leaving aside all the other atrocities and horrors that are caused by this system. 500 million children. Think of it, you know, and this is capitalism. This is capitalism imperialism that is fundamentally responsible for this because of the way it dominates the world at this point.
In describing this and making the distinction between seeing capitalism mainly in terms of greed and just the accumulation of wealth versus the way you are describing with both the viscerality of what we're facing, but also the much more scientific understanding of what capitalism is, why is that distinction so important? What difference does it make to understand it that way?
Because if you just think it's greed, then, you know, you could think that, well, you know, we just have to curb the greed of some of these super rich, you know, these billionaires and whatever. You know, we just have to curb the greed and redistribute the wealth. And you don't understand that you can't redistribute the wealth in any fundamental term because the whole system will collapse. If you think about everything I was describing about the way this capitalist imperialist system actually works, its actual internal dynamics that drive it, if you think about that, if you try to take, you know, curb the accumulation of tremendous wealth by these capitalists, and they're going to go under to other capitalists, and the whole system will come apart at the seams and will, you know, and lead to this complete chaos. And that's why I say Trump is not going to bring back all these factory jobs that all these workers have been, you know, yes, have lost, you know, including a lot of black people and others have lost, which isn't talked about enough. You know, as a result of the development of capitalism, imperialism, once again, since World War II, and particularly in the last five decades or so since the 1970s, when it's become much more globalized, internationalized. So, you know, you have to get to, you have to get to the root of the problem. The root of the problem is the basic nature and the basic driving dynamics of the system. And you have to completely replace that system. You have to completely overthrow and uproot it and then develop an economy that doesn't depend on two things, doesn't depend on exploiting masses of people. And isn't driven and riven through by this ruthless anarchic competition among competing capitalists. So, you know, you have to have a whole different foundation. You have to have an economy that collectivizes the means of production that I talked about, that on that basis can carry out a unified, planned approach to developing the economy in the interests of the masses of people, while providing not just for their immediate material needs, as important as that is, on a constantly expanding basis, but also, you know, an increasing enriched cultural and intellectual life for the masses of people. But that's because instead of this, you know, this whole system being riven and driven by this conflict, this anarchic competition among capitalists, you in its essence pool the wealth that the people are creating, and then you use it in a planned way to meet their needs, while at the same time having the basis to defend that revolution, that new society, from those who would try to overthrow it and drag people back to the horrors of the old way. So if you don't get to the root and you don't fundamentally change most basically the economy, and then along with that, all the social relations that go along with this exploitative system, and all the culture that reinforces it in the most putrid ways, you know, and all the misinformation that's pumped into people's heads to get them believing that this is the only way things can be, and you just got to go for yourself within this horrific system. You have to change all that, beginning with the economic foundation that's actually oriented to, and not only has the intention, but has the material foundation and basis to develop the economy in a planned way to actually meet the needs of the masses of people. And to get to, and this is something I think is really important to understand, to get to the point where the question of individual survival is no longer a question for the masses of people, but because that is guaranteed. You know, when people, for example, talk about human nature, well, that's just human nature. People are selfish, da-da-da-da-da. The reason people say that is it's a reflection of the capitalist system they live under, where people are forced to compete with each other in order to, you know, to even advance individually, and in many cases, even in order to survive. But with a planned economy based on a collective ownership of the basic means of creating all the wealth of society, you can move beyond that, where that's guaranteed, and then, you know, at the same time on that foundation, you can bring about the transformation of people's thinking to where they no longer are, quote-unquote, selfish in the way they are conditioned to be under this system. So, you know, that human nature changes with the nature of the system. All this is, like, you know, possible now. And not only is it possible, it cries out to be urgently done before this system, you know, literally, you know, puts an end to, you know, at least to human civilization as we know it, which is a very real question. But even if it didn't do that, it creates and enforces a whole dimension of horror for humanity that is not only horrific, but is totally unnecessary.
And that brings us to the end of another show here at the Michael Slate Show. I'd like to thank Andy Z and everybody at the Revolution Nothing Less Show, my assistant producer, Henry Carson, and all of you for tuning in. And again, check out The RevComs on YouTube at youtube.com/TheRevComs and follow at Bob Avakian Official on all your social media platforms. And remember, the problem is not human nature, it is the nature of the system. Through a real revolution, a better world is possible. My name is Sansara Taylor. I'll talk to you again next week.